Chapter 6. I Become Supreme Lord of the Bathroom. Once I got over the fact that my Latin teacher was a horse, we had a nice tour, though I was careful not to walk behind him. I'd done pooper scooper patrol in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade a few times, and, I'm sorry, I did not trust Kyron's back end the way I trusted his front. We passed the volleyball pit, several of the campers nudged each other. One pointed to the minotaur horn I was carrying. Another said, "That's him." Most of the campers were older than me. Their satyr friends were bigger than Grover, all of them trotting around in orange camp half-blood t-shirts with nothing else to cover their bare, shaggy hindquarters. I wasn't normally shy, but the way they stared at me made me uncomfortable. I felt like they were expecting me to do a flip or something. I looked back at the farmhouse. It was a lot bigger than I'd realized. 4 stories tall, sky blue with white trim, like an upscale seaside resort. I was checking out the brass eagle weather vane on top when something caught my eye, a shadow in the uppermost window of the attic gable. Something had moved the curtain, just for a second, and I got the distinct impression I was being watched. "What's up there?" I asked Kyron. He looked where I was pointing, and his smile faded. "Just the attic." "Somebody lives there?" "No," he said with finality. "Not a single living thing." I got the feeling he was being truthful, but I was also sure something had moved that curtain. "Come along, Percy," Kyron said, his light-hearted tone now a little forced. "Lots to see." We walked through the strawberry fields, where campers were picking bushels of berries while a satyr played a tune on a reed pipe. Kyron told me the camp grew a nice crop for export to New York restaurants and Mount Olympus. "It pays our expenses," he explained. "And the strawberries take almost no effort." He said Mr. D had this effect on fruit-bearing plants. They just went crazy when he was around. It worked best with wine grapes, but Mr. D was restricted from growing those, so they grew strawberries instead. I watched the satyr playing his pipe. His music was causing lines of bugs to leave the strawberry patch in every direction, like refugees fleeing a fire. I wondered if Grover could work that kind of magic with music. I wondered if he was still inside the farmhouse, getting chewed out by Mr. D. "Grover won't get in too much trouble, will he?" I asked Kyron. "I mean, he was a good protector, really." Kyron sighed. He shed his tweed jacket and draped it over his horse's back like a saddle. "Grover has big dreams, Percy. Perhaps bigger than are reasonable. To reach his goal, he must first demonstrate great courage by succeeding as a keeper, finding a new camper, and bringing him safely to Half-Blood Hill." "But he did that." "I might agree with you," Kyron said, "but it is not my place to judge. Dionysus and the Council of Cloven Elders must decide. I'm afraid they might not see this assignment as a success. After all, Grover lost you in New York. Then there's the unfortunate, fate of your mother. And the fact that Grover was unconscious when you dragged him over the property line, the council might question whether this shows any courage on Grover's part." I wanted to protest. None of what happened was Grover's fault. I also felt really, really guilty. If I hadn't given Grover the slip at the bus station, he might not have gotten in trouble. "He'll get a second chance, won't he?" Kyron winced. "I'm afraid that was Grover's second chance, Percy. The council was not anxious to give him another either, after what happened the first time 5 years ago. Olympus knows. I advised him to wait longer before trying again. He's still so small for his age." "How old is he?" "Oh, 28. "What? And he's in 6th grade?" "Satyrs mature half as fast as humans, Percy. Grover has been the equivalent of a middle school student for the past 6 years."
"That's horrible."
"Quite," Kyron agreed. "At any rate, Grover is a late bloomer, even by satyr standards, and not yet very accomplished at woodland magic. Alas, he was anxious to pursue his dream. Perhaps now he will find some other career."
"That's not fair," I said. "What happened the first time? Was it really so bad?"
Kyron looked away quickly. "Let's move along, shall we?"
But I wasn't quite ready to let the subject drop. Something had occurred to me when Chiron talked about my mother's fate as if he were intentionally avoiding the word death. The beginnings of an idea, a tiny, hopeful fire, started forming in my mind. Chiron, I said, if the gods and Olympus and all that are real, yes, child, does that mean the underworld is real too? Chiron's expression darkened. Yes, child. He paused, as if choosing his words carefully. There is a place where spirits go after death. But for now, until we know more, I would urge you to put that out of your mind. What do you mean, until we know more? Come, Percy, let's see the woods. As we got closer, I realized how huge the forest was. It took up at least a quarter of the valley, with trees so tall and thick, you could imagine nobody had been in there since the Native Americans. Chiron said, "The woods are stocked, if you care to try your luck, but go armed." "Stocked with what?" I asked. "Armed with what?" "You'll see. Capture the flag is Friday night. Do you have your own sword and shield?" "My own? No," Chiron said. "I don't suppose you do. I think a size 5 will do. I'll visit the armory later." I wanted to ask what kind of summer camp had an armory, but there was too much else to think about, so the tour continued. We saw the archery range, the canoeing lake, the stables, which Chiron didn't seem to like very much, the javelin range, the sing-along amphitheater, and the arena where Chiron said they held sword and spear fights. "Sword and spear fights?" I asked. "Cabin challenges and all that," he explained. "Not lethal, usually. Oh, yes, and there's the mess hall." Chiron pointed to an outdoor pavilion framed in white Grecian columns on a hill overlooking the sea. There were a dozen stone picnic tables, no roof, no walls. "What do you do when it rains?" I asked. Chiron looked at me as if I'd gone a little weird. "We still have to eat, don't we?" I decided to drop the subject. Finally, he showed me the cabins. There were 12 of them, nestled in the woods by the lake. They were arranged in a U, with 2 at the base and 5 in a row on either side, and they were without doubt the most bizarre collection of buildings I'd ever seen.